Hi, how's it going? Daniel Markham here with Nerd Roundup at danielbmarkham.com. You may be wondering, what is Nerd Roundup? And that's a good question. Nerd Roundup is where every week we sit down and kick around the stories of the week from a nerd angle, technology angle. We like to look at what other technology people are talking about, what the comments are like. We live in a wonderful world of technology and science, and it's fun to talk about. It's fun to point out what's going on. And so this is all about having fun. I have an open invitation to, by golly, four or five of my friends to come by whenever they can. Today, nobody came by, and that's sad, but we're going to be fine anyway. I've got about a dozen articles to share with you. Some really wild stuff this week in the biology sector, so let's get right to it here. So, a secret algorithm is transforming DNA evidence. This defendant could be the first to scrutinize it. So, for anybody who's watched Law and Order or various cop shows, one of the things that happens is they take a DNA sample. And sometimes they say, well, the DNA sample is too polluted to actually get anything from it. There's too many DNA people that's contributed DNA to the sample, and so we can't identify just one person. Well, if you know about DNA, it's this, you know, huge long string of ACTG into genes and genes into chromosomes. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's gigabytes of stuff in every person's DNA. What they thought they would do, and this is insane, is they're pulling off sections that they can find. Just any sections. It's like one of those shredders that shreds a newspaper and there's little pieces everywhere. They just pick up little pieces all over the place from whoever was there. And then they statistically match the pieces both to one another and to the sample person they're looking for. Statistically, this should work. The math works. It's sort of looking like it's very similar to looking for a hash collision. If it's done correctly, it's unlikely to happen. So I get it, but dang, that's an odd thing. I think this would be kind of premised on exactly how many samples they had and how well the match was done. It looks like kind of thing that you could tweak one way or the other and either make it like rock solid science or just, push the button and this guy's guilty. We'll see how it works out. That's computers, DNA, and courtrooms. Next up, John Carmack tweeted last week. He's like, talk about scope creep. If you don't know who John Carmack is one of the founders and creators of Doom, a super cool game from the, I guess, 1990s, id Software, coder extraordinaire. But he was talking about this web USB API. So first we had, the Great Pumpkin made serial buses, and it was good. And then we made faster serial buses, and it was also good. And then we made the universal serial bus, and it was wonderful. And then we had version 2, and that was really cool. And then we had version 3, and version 3 is no longer universal. There are, oh my God, probably a dozen, two dozen different major tweaks on version 3 such that it's not even, I don't know why they call it the universal serial bus anymore. The plug is universal, but the format isn't. And if you don't buy the right cables or hook up the things the right way, you end up frying your gear, which is exactly the freaking reason we had USB to begin with. So not to be deterred by that clusterfuck, the USB group has said, you know, let's do this only over the web because everything you do over the web is more cool. Wow. And they've got motivating applications. They try to justify educational devices, web drivers. You got a hammer. You just got to bang on all kinds of stuff because most things will be a nail if you hit it hard enough with a hammer. I do not approve of this. I think they should go back to USB 3, maybe make that work before we go on down to web USB. Next up is a follow-up to an article we talked about last week, James and I. And this is about what happens when stars kind of wink out over a period of time and come back. No, it's probably not aliens. It's probably gas clouds, but we don't really know for sure because there's a lot of different cases of this happening and the spectra changes. You know, if something is emitting a certain spectra and a solid thing comes in front of it, that's one sort of spectra change as it goes out, winks out and winks back. But if it does it in a different kind of way, well, it's not a solid thing and maybe it's a bunch of chunky things. And they're just kind of perplexed. And this is a really great article talking about several instances of this and why they are perplexed. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Good thing to follow up on. Next article. Okay, so, yeah. This is the 404 page not found article. This is a story that ran about 5 days ago, and what it boiled down to was that crooks are now using Tinder to hook up with people, lonely people, drug them, and then force them to give up their cryptocurrency. This is a serious freaking problem. I shit you not. And the reason why is that we're able to carry billions of dollars around in these little thumb drives, basically. And that's an enormous risk for people to have. And even if the money's online on the web somewhere, you're still directly in control of a huge sum of cash just based on your password and maybe your biometric. That makes you sort of a target, especially if people know you have money. And this, my friends, is not the only case of this. I have been reading about this for about 2 years. I think they pulled this because I think that they don't want to talk about it. Like the ransomware story, which ran, you know, underwater for around 3 or 4 years. I just don't think they want to talk about it. And I don't blame them, because the more you publicize this sort of gimmick, the more people are going to use it. So I am going to show the story anyway, because all 17 of you people watching, I don't know if you'll tell anybody. So it actually, they redid it on, where is this, Crypto News. And this is just sort of a story of the web article. But I have a link to this in case you're interested. This is really interesting here because there's some historical parallels. In the Middle Ages, there was no such thing as a police force. There was a lot of people who were really, really poor and criminals. And yet there were people who walked around with huge sums of money, which is very similar to what's happening here today. And so I really think you should probably go back and look at maybe, you know, the 1200 or 1400s in France, for instance. How did they handle walking around with a bunch of money? They didn't take armed guards with them everywhere, but what did they do? Cool story. Next story, Tencent uses facial recognition on teenage gamers. Tencent's a Chinese company. The wonderful People's Republic of China has decided that their kids are spending too much dang time playing games. Probably true. So in order to help them, they've declared that kids should not play games between, I think, 10 p.m. and 7 a.m., which, of course, the kids would just lie about. And so then they decided that to play games during that time, you had to have an adult username and password. So then the kids just got their parents' username and password. So now they're going, okay, we want you to have an adult username and password, and we want to do face recognition for you to see that you're, you know, the parent and not the kid. And then we will be happy that you're not some kid spending too much time online. This is fraught with all sorts of problems. It's weird how we're going from, hey, we have face recognition so you don't have to sign in. What do they call it? Hello World, or Microsoft has a Kitschke name for this. We're going from this from being, hey, it's a cool feature, to being, hey, you got to use this, to being, hey, the government says you have to use this. I am not happy with this story. I'm not happy with many stories coming from the People's Republic of China. Paul Graham, a few other people, brought up a bunch of articles last week. You don't see people criticize China anymore. And part of the reason why is that there's so many billionaires and millionaires in China. There's so much money there that if you have a commercial venture, like your NBA or you're in Hollywood wanting to finance a movie or whatever you have, you don't want to tick off the Chinese people because they will pull your money, or they will pull funding from anybody who funds you because they're some vicious motherfuckers. And that's just... it is equivalent of censoring people without censoring them. So you will not hear people criticize China like they used to. 20 years ago, we talked quite openly about how they harvest people's organs. They're running concentration camps for the killing people. Today, they have secret police who disappear off the street, never come back. Not a very good place, but that we are certainly buying a lot of stuff they make in their factories, and this is sending a lot of money their way, and They're using that money to promote more China stuff. Next up is Marines train with handheld swarming drones that can also be fired from 40-millimeter grenade launchers. This is near and dear to my heart because we get to blow up stuff. This is really wild. So this is, if you're familiar with a 40-millimeter round, it's about, I don't know, like that big. Maybe twice, three times the size of a 12-gauge shotgun. Not big at all. But they've made these little handheld drones for combat soldiers. And here's a picture of a guy releasing one. Here's a schematic of what all's in it. It is just so cool. God knows how much the Defense Department is paying for it, but I want one. And so the idea being that it's so easy to carry that you've got a squad of Marines going somewhere and they don't know what's over the horizon. They want intel or they want to attack. Actually, they're using this kind of stuff to attack people now. So everybody just pulls up their little handheld drone and now you've got, you know, 40 little drones skimming the ground with each with a hand grenade or something. It's an amazing, warfare is changing. This is probably, I would say probably the closest analogy would be the longbow. Because this is just going to change everything. Once the longbow came out and once gunpowder came out, everybody had to rejigger how they did defenses, how attacks happened. Drone warfare is equivalent to that. I think it's even funnier is that, I don't know, 5, 6 years ago, whenever you brought up drones, what they could do, this party line was, and maybe it still is for a lot of folks, oh, you're just afraid of drones because you're a Luddite and blah, blah, blah. Hey, some of these drones are going to come kick your ass. Yeah, I wouldn't tell the drones that. Cool story. Next story, psychedelic drug psilocybin sparks immediate and lasting growth to neural connections. So this is part of a longer story of, hey, these psychedelic drugs that we completely banned doing research on, maybe we should have been studying those and figuring out how we might use them to make people non-suicidal, how to make them happier for months at a time, how to increase brain function, repair from comas. Maybe it was a really bad idea to ban psychedelic drug research. And I think it was. I saw something, what was it, the ecstasy drug. If you're suicidal, there are people who've been suicidal for, you know, months or years, in and out of hospitals in the ER, and they gave them one hit of this ecstasy thing. I don't think they even gave them any counseling. It was just, take this, and they immediately stopped being suicidal and stayed that way for several months. That's amazing. That tells me that we have harmed probably millions of people over the last 50 years by not simply doing research. It's a horrible, horrible thing, but it's going to be really cool to see how this thing turns out. Another super awesome nerdy story. How do kids figure out what words mean? New computer model has answers. And so what these guys did is they built a computer model of how we learn words in language. And that's like far out enough because it uses social clues and that's some really wild stuff. Check this out. This is some of the training, and they use this with babies. And you got like four images here, and I don't know how the baby figured this out because I looked at it for a minute or two and I have no idea what the hell they're trying to do. But I guess the computer worked through it. And what they're talking about, the reason they're using this model is they want to model how infants and children learn language in a computer. Then they want to bring real kids in and then tweak the model until the model represents real kids. And then they can start seeing how different kinds of kids learn words differently, what that means in the model. This is one of many, many uses of computer modeling that I like. And the reason why is there's a round trip, a quick round trip. And they're just using the model as a way to iterate and explore. I imagine this would lead to taking what they learn from the model and then maybe using child neurology. But it's, you know, it's not one of these things where they just build the model and then they do astrology. They're really cool. Cool stuff. I'm interested in seeing more of it. It's early days. As you guys know, I'm quite interested in math and human language. And this has got a lot of both in it. So this just comes right down my alley. So I read this, and I think my comment was like, am I smoking crack? This is just insane. And it's a research paper. I've got, I think, two articles, two links here, because I want you to think, be sure that it's not just me. There are things inside all of our cells, and they're like giant compared to the other pieces. They're these giant things, and they look like, I guess, sort of like vases, maybe, or spinning top. And we don't know what they are, and they've decided to call them Borgs, and that is like the Star Trek Borg, except for plural. Borgs are giant extra chromosomal elements with potential to augment methane oxidation. As you can see from that title, they're thinking that maybe these things are used to like help process methane inside the cell. But watching the other technical folks comment on this, they don't know what the hell's going on. It's like, hey, wonder what that is. Let's poke at it. The idea in general is to, if we can figure out what these things are doing, well, even if we can't figure out what they're doing, if we can just like stick stuff in these little Borgs, then we could deliver them inside of cells. We could use them as a transport mechanism. So that was crazy. You know, I think there's a picture of these guys somewhere. I'll put a picture on the blog. If that wasn't crazy enough, you know, the more I read from the biologists, the computational biologists, because they're the guys that hang out with us the most, the more they were like, well, you know, there's a shit ton of stuff we don't really know what's going on in the cell. There's a lot of stuff. This is a big thing. I was like, is every area of science, if you learn it far enough, it's like, I don't know why we have numbers. It seemed like something good the Romans did. This is crazy. So there's the BioArxid research paper. Here's the tweet I picked it up from. This is from Jill Banfield, who is a professor of microbial metagenomics. And her tweet says, I repeat, I haven't been this excited about a discovery since CRISPR. We found something enigmatic that, like CRISPR, is associated with microbial genomes. We have named these unique entities Borgs. Resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. Yeah, so follow those links if you're interested. That was like, how much do you actually really know? Are you guys sure? I mean, like, genes, ACTG, right? We learned that. And, you know, do you know that? Next link, please. DNA has four bases, but some viruses swap in a fifth. It's like, nope, not that one either. So it's like, holy shit, everything you learned is wrong. So it's, you don't just have the four bases. You got more stuff. And yeah, got a little, here's a diagram. Instead of an AT base pair, you can actually have a ZT base pair. A polyphase enzyme dedicated parsing Z bases with T. So it's not only swapped in some viruses, it's actually being used. If you followed along 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were talking about the theory that tumors and cancers and viruses and organisms are all part of this huge multi-generational circle of life where, you know, tumors can evolve to viruses or vice versa, and they can evolve to separate organisms. So this is right down that alley. Wonder how many other base pairs we could have. Wow, that's wild, wild stuff. Next up, this is for my libertarian friends. The United States Postal Service has a semi-secret internet surveillance apparatus. You know, I think we talked about this about 6 months ago. They already have a few SWAT teams, because you don't want people licking stamps the wrong way or, you know, using the wrong size envelopes. So they got to have a SWAT team, but they also monitor social media. And they say semi-secret. You can read this as a Reason article. It's just, but of course the post office would be monitoring our social media. When I talk to the mailman, I want him to know who my friends are. Yeah. And this is another one of those sort of articles that we libertarians just read and go, ah, and run around with their head on fire. this is the world we live in, and I got it. I understand that, but it still continues to amaze me as it gets worse. It's the ICOP program. What do they call this? Situation. ICOP. Internet Covert Operations Program. Internet Covert Operations. The post office. I wonder if people are actually like doing some sort of electronic mail that would need to be stopped or postage. Agents assume fake identities online, use sophisticated intelligence tools, and employ facial recognition software. Of course. I love you, post office guys. What a world. And finally, speaking of what a world, this is a research paper. This is from a psychology journal. Researchers explore employee perceptions of bullshit in the workplace with the Organizational Bullshit Perception Scale. That would be the OBPS. This is a study published in Psychological Reports. Here's a link to it if you want to find it. What is your OBPS score at your organization? What can you do about it? Workplace BS needs to be called out, he concluded. It's very important that individuals feel empowered to ask questions in their workplace. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, so, Okay. Well, you know, at least there's a scale. It's like, you know, boss, I'm not saying that was a lot of bullshit, but that's sort of a... What do you guys think? Everybody holds up like a number, like on the Olympics, 4 or 7. Okay, looks like about 6.2 for that one. Okie dokie. Couple things before we go. I heard about a new language. This is my IDE. I heard about a new language. I haven't loaded up yet. Pony Lang. And Pony Lang is supposed to be a fully object-oriented language that has concurrency built into its type system. I just pinged John Kern about that, asking if he's interested in doing some techie stuff. John and I are talking about doing, I'm calling this tentatively the long nerd. And basically, instead of just doing what happened this week, let's pick a topic and do, like, here's something that's been going on for 20, 30 years. And, you know, we did this and we thought this was going to happen, but it didn't. We tried this and this didn't happen. And so still having the same kind of fun kicking around ideas, but with how one topic sort of progressed instead of this sort of hodgepodge you get every week here. John seemed interested. I think the first one we're going to do is specifications. So what sort of things do you do outside a computer program before you program to prevent errors from happening? And that's been a heck of fun over the last 40 years. We started flowcharts and... Yeah, macro assemblers, and it just kind of went from there. Also, the Bobster, I think, emailed me last week. He said, Daniel, I got another week or so. I need to do some other things. But I'm looking forward to coming back when I can. Sorry I missed for so long. And I said, Bob, you're always welcome. Come when you can. Don't sweat it either way. Because, I mean, it's not much of a fun lunch counter if people are kind of standing around angry about one another. Oh, yeah, this also reminds me of my other friend, Greg Young, who did the CQRS stuff. If you're familiar with that, command query response separation. He's interested in coming by as well. He had the idea of having questions that we could argue about. I think maybe Greg has spent too much time watching cable TV. I'm like, Greg, you know, this really isn't a sort of let's argue thing, but hey, I have no rules. You want to put some questions up and argue about it? Feel free. And he responded, he said, well, what? He said, I might call some people some names. I like, dude, it's a team lunchroom. You want to come in and start calling us all names? Give it a shot, bub. I think it would be a hoot. I'm not sure that's going to work out for you, but we love having you no matter what your behavior is like. And we can start talking about how to actively apply the storming, forming, and norming thing with people online. Greg's a cool guy. He really is. And I'd love to have him on. All right, now another kind of bit of random news. I went back through, as I was telling James last week, went back through all my graphics from the first and second books and redid them all in laminated form. Actually, it's about 8 or 9 I actually redid. Here we have the analysis pyramid. So if you haven't read the first book, analysis, the way I define it is simply engaging in questions. Ask people what you need to, they want you to do. And when you think you got that, you write a test or you're done. And you, that's it. There's no flow charts or methods or any of that. But it turns out that was like too difficult to actually say. So I have this little pyramid I call the analysis pyramid. And at the top, you just ask one question. You're good with the answer. You leave. And then I have an example where you have to ask 2 questions and 4 questions. And it's a pyramid. You sort of keep diving down on the things you don't understand until you're ready to go. This is pretty much how people's brains work. Unless you're doing some sort of requirement system where you've got a Word template that's 50 pages long, really most of us just ask questions about stuff we don't know, and then we go write the code. The one piece that people might not know is that there's the directed acyclic graph that's going on in your head in the background as you ask this. So concept X, I don't understand. I ask some questions. I get A, B, and C for that. You link up concept X with concepts A, B, and C. And then that's actually what's kind of what builds the pyramid as you go along. It's why it is a pyramid. And those, we can talk about what those are and all that. That actually comes in book 3. The final bit of news, speaking of book 3, is I started this past week on writing a chapter called The Argument Game. Argument Game is all about how to sit down with folks with various opinions who are maybe upset about things and reach some sort of productive conclusion that you can build technology around. And I was forced to write that essay, like I've been forced to write many others, because to look at learning at scale, whether it's AI, organizational learning, education systems, you have to be able to describe how do groups of people learn. Can you describe the learning process in such a way that it would work for both a computer AI system, a guy sitting reading a book, and maybe, you know, 1,000 people at a big corp? Can you have some sort of theoretical underpinning that applies for all of those, number one? And if you have that, can you then use it to predict how you can do different things to learn better and all that? So I started on the argument game to talk about sort of how people can have those conversations, and ended up doing 1,000 words on foundations because I just didn't feel like I had enough basis to write that essay. I don't mind bullshitting people, but I want to know that I'm linking back to research and all that. So I ended up writing 1,000 words on foundations. I'm left with one question. I go to the argument game. The one question is, how do we define boundaries? And so it's, what a weird question. So, you know, so this is a biological organism. Say this Daniel dude, right? Is that one thing? One person? Or is it like a trillion cells? Or is it, you know, 10 body parts? How do you define one or another? I have, you know, 6 5-person teams in my company. Is it one company? Is it 6 teams? Is it 30 people? And of course, all of those things are true, but you have to have some discriminating criteria to define boundaries. That's true both for biological systems and AI systems. And also just computer programs for that matter. I've got this, you know, 300,000 line of code base. Is that one program, or is it like 20,000 methods? So you have to have one piece of discrimination work, one model that you can then apply to all those situations so that you can then go forward and talk about how to do it better. And it's the boundary question right now, and I think I can plug my way through it, but it's weird that it ended up with boundaries, all the things. That's about it. And what else did I have? Oh, yeah, I think I did. Yes, I did a new logo for the books. You can see it right here. It is flaming text. And golly darn, I love flaming text. If I could make it blink, I would. But I can't. They took the blink out. So if you're interested, if you like the logo, let me know. If you hate it, let me know. I am Daniel Markham. I appreciate you guys coming by. I think we're going to have a lot more people next week, but we'll see. I will see you on the internet.